Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring. Chris, the conference finals are set. We have the Miami Heat hosting the Boston Celtics tomorrow night and the Dallas Mavericks taking on the Golden State Warriors on Wednesday. Normally, we do a preamble here, but there's just too much to discuss after a pair of blowouts on Sunday that I feel like we should just jump right in. Is that okay with you?
Yep, let's do it.
Okay. On today's show, we'll be taking a look at where the Suns and the Bucks go from here and previewing both conference final series. But first, a quick reminder to please keep your emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Chris, there's no place I feel like we can start but Phoenix, where the Suns lost 123-90 on their home court last night. Luka Doncic, this is probably the stat of the season. Luka Doncic had 27 points at halftime of this game. The entire Suns roster had 27 points at halftime of this game. Is this like the worst loss you've ever seen?
If it's not, I'd have to think about what was. I mean, it was so bad. The best way to describe this, I really like analogies. If you read my stories, my book, you get tired of them because it's like all I think about over the course of the day is how to come up with an analogy. This was like, I've realized when games start to break into like 30, 40, 50 point range in terms of margins, I'm more intrigued by that sometimes than like a close game. Because it's like, I can't turn away. It's a bad accident. It's like rubbernecking. You can't turn away from it. And so as they just kept expanding the lead into the 40s, and they hit 80 before the Suns hit 40, you're like, what is happening? And yeah, as you mentioned, Luka having 27, you know, at half, just like the Suns did, there was a point where I think he got his 30th before the Suns had 30 points as well in the third. So it was bad. I saw a stat last night that Luka outscored, just last night's game, he outscored obviously Booker. I mean, he was outscoring the whole damn team for a while. He out-rebounded Ayton. He out-assisted Chris Paul, and he had more steals. And actually, I don't even know if that was last night. I think maybe – I'm sorry, this is for the series. He outscored Booker, out-rebounded Ayton, out-assisted Chris Paul, and had more steals than Mikal Bridges for the series. Really hard to win a series that way. Despite that, I was a fool and said that I thought that the Suns would somehow find a way to get Game 7 because, you know, the home team had won all six games of the series. And I just couldn't bring myself to believe that Chris Paul would have a fourth game in a row where he just didn't look himself. Obviously, he was not the only problem. Everybody was a problem yesterday. I also never expect a Monty Williams coach team to just kind of fall through the cracks like that. That's not falling through the cracks. That's like falling through the entire floor. The whole floor just, you know, implodes. So, yeah, it's certainly a stunning result. More so when you factor in that this was one of the best teams we've had in recent memory as far as record-wise, in terms of how much better they were than the rest of the league during a regular season. It was stunning. And it started to kind of have a little bit of a feel where Dallas was just – and shout out to Jason Kidd. Like, one of the question marks, biggest question marks from a coaching standpoint, I thought, coming into the year and what he would do with the team, whether he was the right guy for the job. He had answers each time Phoenix tried to go at something different or try something different. They retorted very well in this series, and they had more answers than Phoenix did. I never expected it to result in what we saw in Game 7, but that was easily one of the most shocking, if not the most shocking. I don't even know what I would put on par with what we saw yesterday night.
I agree. I have no real comparison for this because, I mean, I'm pretty sure no team has ever lost a Game 7 in NBA history by that margin. And this is a 64-win team. I picked the Mavs in 7. I was a little skeptical about Phoenix's ability to sustain that level of dominance that they had in the regular season in the postseason, just because, I mean, it was hard for me to kind of put my finger on it. Like, they just, like, they have a great backcourt. Ayton had a very good season. Mikal Bridges, runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year. Solid bench. It was just like, it felt like they would be in series where they did not have the best player. And that is a reductive way of looking at it sometimes. But when you're going up against a player who is as transcendent as Luka Doncic or a flamethrower like Steph Curry, or even if they were caught in a battle against Nikola Jokic, not saying that the Nuggets would beat the Suns, but it's the playoffs are so difficult when you don't have the best player on the floor. It's the time-honored NBA. It's an NBA kind of maxim that usually bears out. And so a part of me just didn't have the same level of confidence as a lot of other people did in Phoenix. All that said, I did not ever expect them to, like, just crap the bed like that.
Anybody had them losing by 25 at home. And 25 is being generous. But that would have been like, you're crazy if someone says that. If you start talking about 40, mid-40s, midway through the third, fourth quarter. I mean, at one point I looked at the game, looked at the score, and it was, you weren't hearing any audience or crowd reaction to them, Devin Booker making a basket. And it's because they were down 40 when he was doing it. And I remember thinking in my head, what if you just spotted them 20 points? Like, would the crowd be excited if Devin Booker cuts into the lead and makes it 18 instead of 20? But you'd have to even spot them 20 to do that because they're down 40. It was a wild, at home too, you know, and just, again, the season they had, you're absolutely right. And that's why I think a lot of us struggled, if we voted for Booker at all for MVP, which I didn't. I can't remember what your ballot had or if you had him on at the end of your ballot.
He was not on my ballot.
It's weird because we've said that. Like, Booker took a step. Statistically, it's weird. His stats are pretty static from year to year. He took a little bit of a step forward with the stats this year. But him and Chris Paul, we've talked about how they kind of share the burden, share the responsibility for the offense, getting the offense set, getting clutch baskets in the fourth. We've even seen that in this series where that was the case. But I don't know, like, in the way that you talk about Luka, generally speaking, there's kind of one person that the buck stops with as far as, like, they're not going to let their team go down without a fight. That's a shared responsibility for Phoenix. And so when everything goes off the rails the way it did yesterday, who's that guy that you count on? And after, I would say, really a quarter and a half, I guess the second quarter, you felt like they'll at least put up some fight here once we get to the third. But they were down by so much. They were down by 30 points. It's like you need to have a good 15-point run just to get into the thing again, not to take the lead, not to tie. So it just got so far gone so quickly. And that was what I was really struck by. It's just, this is a team that we talk about them having some young guys, some young stars. Chris Paul is there. We know stuff can go off the rails with him a little bit, but we don't see it happen like that. We've seen them unravel where they give up a big lead. There's a big difference between that and spotting another team 30, 40 points through two or three quarters. Just wild, wild stuff. Nobody saw that coming. And it's crazy because I think it's going to impact a lot about how we view the next series for Dallas, where you look at that and it's like, well, Phoenix was maybe the strongest team all told, all in, all things considered, top to bottom. Dallas doesn't match up poorly against Golden State at all, in my opinion. I mean, that's a difficult one too, where you mentioned Steph and like how great a player he is. Like, I can see a universe in which a lot of people are going to take Dallas. I may take Dallas as far as what my thought in this series is. And defensively, you have to feel really good about kind of how they looked and their attention to detail with certain things. Doesn't mean that Golden State won't find different ways to pick them apart, but what a series from Jason Kidd. What a series from Dallas. And Luka, hands down, was so much better than everybody else in the series. That one's going to leave a mark, and it raises some serious questions about what Phoenix is going to do in the short term, I think.
So before we get to Phoenix's future, which I want to talk about because it's very interesting, Luka Doncic averaged 32.6 points, 9.9 rebounds, 7.0 assists, 2.1 steals per game in this series. And he shot 33.8% behind the three-point line. He is just like the reason why what you're saying about them being a bad matchup against the Warriors, potentially, it all is just like, okay, who's going to guard Luka? Right? Or quicker, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but like,
no,
that's how I see it.
That's the obvious question here.
I'm like, all of a sudden, okay, so I don't want to step too much on later in the show on what we're going to talk about and previewing the series, but it's just like, okay, you've got Andrew Wiggins. Is Andrew Wiggins going to guard him? Is Draymond Green going to guard him? It just reminds me of the 2015 finals where it was just like LeBron, and it was like, okay, who's going to guard LeBron? And LeBron's supporting cast was not as good as Luka's, I think, because it was hurt and he didn't have a ton of spacing and yada, yada, yada. But the way that they threw bodies at LeBron in that series, like Klay, Iguodala, Draymond, I'm trying to think who else was trying to guard him in that series. And it's like now you have Iguodala's neck is hurt and he's like 38 years old. I don't even know if he's going to play in this series. Andrew Wiggins I just don't think that is you just put Luka in the post. He already has a post game. Like it's just barbecue chicken. And is Kuminga the answer? A rookie?
Who suggested that last night on Inside the NBA's?
I think it was Chuck. Chuck said it and Kenny was like,
you're going to put a rookie on that dude? Good luck. You know, and that was the first thought I had too, is that it's easy enough to look at someone's body and say they can do it as far as guarding Luka. And it's easy enough to say Draymond can do it because he can do it. But there's the question of whether you want to burn him out that way. Who, you know, someone that is a relatively key offensive piece for you, not because of the way he scores, but obviously all the other stuff he does. There's also something to be said for, like, the fouls that are sure to come with a role like that. And if he gets in foul trouble quickly or early through guarding Luka, what do you move toward after that? So part of me is thinking you start with Wiggins just because you damn sure don't want to start with Draymond. Yeah, I just don't. It's not, I'm sure Golden State's not looking forward to it. I was really excited, and this happens a lot, where you get excited, and generally speaking, like, there was that one dream year we had that obviously ended in a nightmare where Kawhi, you know, comes down on Zaza's foot. But that was a year that was similar to what I think we would have had now, which is where you've got this loaded Golden State team that everybody fears and everybody kind of knows that's the team to beat. But then you have this San Antonio team that I can't remember. I think they had a better record that season than Golden State. Well, no, they didn't, because that game was in Golden State. So I guess Golden State must have been seeded higher. But, like, that was the one team you really felt like had a shot to take Golden State out in the West. And then, you know, they were up by 15 or whatever it was when Kawhi got hurt. And then the whole game shifts. They end up losing narrowly. And then you knew the rest of the series was going to play out that way, too, if Kawhi couldn't come back. I thought we were kind of headed for a showdown like that between Phoenix and Golden State, just based on the way Phoenix's season looked. Remember, at the very beginning of the season, Phoenix and Golden State were the two teams that started really, really hot and kept that up for most of the year. Then, obviously, Steph cooled off. Draymond got hurt. Klay took a while to come back. So, you know, there was a separation. Memphis kind of climbed in between the two teams. But I still kind of felt like at the end of the day, if Memphis wasn't going to make it there, you were looking at Golden State and Phoenix. Now Phoenix isn't there, but all of a sudden the team that just took Phoenix out looks like they're humming. And looks like they just kind of take Luka's cues. They defend around him. They cover for him. Luka seems to be a little bit more recharged defensively, although the mandate is certainly different defensively against a team like Golden State again. But I was looking forward to watching, like, the balanced nature of what Phoenix can do against Golden State. Now we're talking about, like, you know, the head of the snake and somebody like Luka against a team like Golden State, which Golden State has seen this sometimes. I remember, you know, obviously when they played against New Orleans years and years ago with Anthony Davis, like, Anthony Davis really gave him the best he had and almost took them out for a game or two. But Luka,
I covered that series in person. Shout out to Rajon Rondo.
He was fantastic. I remember it took some really crazy heroics from Steph for them to dominate the series the way they did, as far as the way the series ended. But Luka is as good as, you know, I guess they've played LeBron too, so let me not forget about him, obviously. And LeBron has certainly done his damage to Golden State. But Luka is up there with some of the best, like, individual stars they played against within this Steph era. And so it'll be fascinating to watch. They're going to create some matchup issues, and, you know, I'm having to recalibrate what I think and how I feel about Jason Kidd. Obviously, they had a good regular season. You know, there's enough talent on that roster to get some juice out of what they do. Dinwiddie was huge yesterday, obviously, but it'll be interesting to see against that machine, that Golden State machine. How does Golden State match up? I imagine Steve Kerr will be back. If not at the very beginning of the series, then very close to it.
He is. He is.
Yeah. And how did the team scheme for each other? Because Luka is not going to be someone that they stop. We know that. Is it something where they let Luka get his and try to just cover everybody else to make sure that, you know, other guys are not having a field day against them? I don't know. But it'll be fascinating to watch. And it's something I'm very excited about. I've been looking forward to Phoenix Golden State most of the season. But I'll happily take this because it seems like this could be a really great series.
Basically, if the Mavericks shoot 40% from behind the three-point line, as they did in this series, they're almost unbeatable. Like, because they defend. And
that's the difference.
They have the best player. They'll have the best player in every series. Like, I don't care. I have the utmost respect for Tatum, Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry. I think Luka's just the best player left in the playoffs. I thought that, frankly, yesterday, all due respect to Giannis, too. I would rather have Luka on my team than anyone. in a situation like that. Let's talk about Phoenix, though. 64-win team, dominates the regular season. It's championship or bust, coming off a loss in the finals. It felt like a team of fate. It felt like a revenge tour team, something that they've talked about all year. Their coach is the coach of the year. Basically, all the pieces are back. They upgrade the front court with JaVale McGee and Bismack Biyombo, so they're like ready for a potential showdown with someone like Giannis Antetokounmpo. And for them to flame out as they did in a game where DeAndre Ayton plays 17 minutes and there's a cloud of uncertainty over his future. He is a restricted free agent this summer. I guess, like, to boil it down, do you feel like their window is closed now because of Chris Paul's age? He'll be 38 in the playoffs next season. They have very few, I guess, external resources to bolster this roster. And if you look around the Western Conference, like, you would imagine that the Mavs are going to be even better, a team that they just lost to. You would imagine that the Clippers will be better. The Denver Nuggets will be better. The Memphis Grizzlies will be better. And
Pelicans will be interesting.
The Pelicans will be interesting. The West is going to be a bloodbath next year. And there are integral pieces in Phoenix that are young, that should be improving. But one of their most important pieces is Chris Paul. And the way he closed this season, I don't know about, you know, how many levels there are to the vegan diet, where can he go up a notch with it? I don't know, to reverse aging, but he's not going to be better than he was. I just don't think he can be in the elite performer he was in the last postseason for four straight rounds. And we kind of saw that him crumble in this series where they just attacked him relentlessly. Jalen Brunson attacked him. Luka attacked him.
And then Patrick Beverley attacked him on first take.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's we could have a whole podcast episode about that.
He basically did that for us this morning.
But
yeah, I hear.
Is the window closed, is the question.
It depends on what we're asking about. No, as far, like, can he play better, like, well enough for them to have won this series? He could have done that. I made a joke a week and a half ago about how literally the first game in which Chris Paul played after turning 37, that, you know, his expiration date hit from a basketball standpoint. I was kidding when I said it, but he literally hasn't played a good game since then. So he'll be back next year. I mean, he said that, and I take him at his word with that. It's a whole lot of money on the table, too, for him not to come back. So, obviously, he was going to come back.
Where would he go? Retire?
Right. Like, that question. I don't know if that question was posed to him or if he just said, I'm not retiring. I think he just said it. I don't think someone asked him, is this it for you? Because, obviously, he's there to, like, what, 2025? You know, I think he signed a 3 or 4 year extension. So, whatever he signed. He's around. Like, he's going to probably, what we likely see from him, I don't think he'll fall all the way off. Regular season wise, but I do think he'll struggle. Maybe they'll cut back on his minutes, which would probably be smart anyway. But yeah, I think you're right that it's super, super unlikely that we see a consistent 4 rounds from him, which means that Booker has to take on more offensively. It means if Ayton comes back, he has to take on more offensively. It would be great to see someone like Bridges even try to take a little bit of a step in that regard as well. You'd love to see that from him anyway, regardless of whether Chris Paul was in the picture or not, is a guy that makes a lot of money for your team and, you know, is a young enough guy to make a jump in that regard, maybe in some of his stuff, just self-created stuff. Chris Paul, I mean, we're a round removed from him having gone 14 for 14 in a game. So, like, I don't trust that he's gone from that to, like, just being trash. He's not. But I do think that there's something to be said for, you know, can you carry us to a title? And I think that ship has probably sailed. you see a game like the 14 for 14 and you start to think that maybe he could do that. He did it for a game or two of the last finals. But the reality is, like, it seems really, really unlikely now moving forward, another year into the future, another 2 years in the future. So it's going to have to rely on other guys more than it has. I don't think you can trust it after what you saw in this series, where even if you think offensively he's got enough left in the tank to carry you to some extent, you just watched a team exploit him defensively. And that certainly is not going to get stronger, better, more versatile in the next year, 2 years. That's probably the thing that goes first. So no, I mean, he's not the guy. To your question of whether the window's closed for the team, I don't know how much of your question was about him or kind of just the team in general.
It's about the team. Can the team win the championship?
Ayton is such a big question mark here, which, by the way, and Rohan was out there and was in the media room when this was said. I didn't see it as far as the video. I probably should have watched it right before the podcast. In terms of how stern, I guess, Monty Williams was in regards to the question about why Ayton was pulled last night. Or not why, but, I guess it was why. Like, why did he get pulled and not get put back into the game after the third quarter? He was like, internal decision. And he just left it at that. And, you know, there's been the clip that's been making the rounds of the lack of effort he made getting out to the three-point line when somebody from Dallas was taking a three. Obviously, they're already down by 35, 40 points, whatever, and Ayton's not making an effort. That alone kind of feels like there probably was more to it than that. It makes me wonder if there was something deeper kind of boiling between the two of them. Because, look, hell, I watched Giannis on a play where he really didn't close out all that hard yesterday. He's exhausted. I imagine when you get down by 20, 30 points, particularly at home, in a game that, you know, the sort of season Phoenix has had, it's just deflating. And so I remember thinking, wow, that seems like a slight overreaction to me based on what I've seen and what I know, which is only what people were watching on television. Makes me wonder if there was more to it than that between Monty and DeAndre Ayton. I have no clue, but that was an interesting sort of coda to end on. And, you know, that sort of ending to a season, even if Ayton had been playing well, which he'd kind of been inconsistent and kind of cold since the beginning of the series, that sort of loss to that degree is always going to kind of shake you up a little bit, make you rethink a little bit, like, what do we want to build our team around? Do we want to commit this much money to this guy? You know, before, I think if you'd asked a couple weeks ago, after they're coming out of the first round series, you would have said, we're pretty comfortable maxing this guy, I think. And I don't think that's the answer anymore. Again, one game seems like an overreaction to just overreact to, but he didn't really command this series the way that I thought he could. Think about the conversations prior to this series, too. We talked about how Phoenix was matchup proof, relatively speaking. That wasn't fully the case here. They got outmatched and they got out schemed. And I do think you have to ask some of the questions, like, quite frankly, ever since Šarić got hurt in the finals last year, in the playoffs, they've kind of not been able to just go to something with small ball or anything else. So it's a big question. And if they don't max him, someone else probably will, and they're going to lose him. So they're going to look different next year if he's not there. And I don't know what the ceiling looks like for them when he's not there, who you replace him with, what lineups you go to, what's realistic for them. It's going to be a much different team if he's not there. Like, he's not perfect, but if he's not there and you're not maxing the guy, it looks really different next year for this team.
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of like, I have a very hard time actually picturing him not in Phoenix. They could sign and trade. You know, that's a possibility. But, like, what's more troubling is just Phoenix should go to the table, should go to him and say, here is a max extension. We love you. Sign it. And I don't think that that's going to happen. Or at least the odds of that happening.
I think it's less likely after yesterday, for sure.
Right, exactly. And so you have teams out there that would love to have him. Two that can offer him, I believe, the max are the Spurs and the Pistons. Like, those two teams would, in 2 seconds, be like, here is a 4-year max extension. And if he goes and he signs that and he makes the team that drafted him first overall, like, match that, it's just, that's just not what you want. Like, as an organ, like, as a player, how could you want that to be a part of this organization that clearly doesn't believe in you? That's
troubling. You've been making him get to this year in the first place without doing it. After a final exactly. run, no less. Yeah.
Exactly. And it also will come, you know, Devin Booker is likely going to be Supermax extension eligible this summer if he makes an All-NBA team, which he will. They will, or they absolutely should, give him the Supermax. He's going to ask for that. So you're going to give Devin Booker the Supermax and then kind of dangle or not come through with proper compensation for Ayton, who's also a building block and key to your future. His development is integral. Like, if you don't have him, you know, he could still be a superstar in this league. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. So if you don't have him, I know that they had a lot of success this season with JaVale starting, with Bismack starting. It's just not the same. Like, going forward, pitching it forward post Chris Paul, like, he's so important for your organization. And if you don't compensate him and make him feel good, then I don't know if you're able to recover there. So a sign and trade could be something that I see happening. You know, a team like Atlanta could get involved. San Antonio could get involved in a sign and trade.
Charlotte?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm thinking about like teams that would love to have somebody like that. Look, I mean, it'll be interesting. We have to see what happens with Utah, obviously. I don't know what they would trade to make it happen. I could imagine that Rudy Gobert may not be there. I'm thinking about a team like the Bulls, who I don't know how they would make it, the gymnastics of it work. But Vucevic, like, to me, I think you saw enough from their season to realize that he's probably not the guy as your five man. But somebody like Ayton can give you enough defensive credibility there. And he gives you an offensive option that can make mid-range shots and score at the basket with his back to the basket in a way that Vooch can do that, but he's not really. He's a defensive liability sometimes, certainly in a series against a team that shoots three.
I feel like that would be such a mistake. Like, I'm sorry.
For the Bulls?
No, not for the Bulls.
Oh, for Phoenix to not the max Suns. The guy. If you're even having a conversation about it, it's going to be offensive to him and his folks, aside from the fact that he's relatively homegrown. I know it's not true just in terms of where he's from, but he played at Arizona. And you're right. It's funny because I wondered at the beginning of the season when Ayton missed some time and before Kaminsky got hurt, and then obviously JaVale and different stuff. And what's the player? What's the guy's name? He's with Indiana now. Jalen Smith? It's been a long season, man. My bad.
Yikes to James Jones, not yikes to you.
Oh, okay. They've had so many. They've literally had four guys that have all played well when they've gotten opportunities to play. And based on that, if you're, I don't want to step inside Robert Sarver's head because I'm not sure what I would find. But aside from, I always want to save my money being a key prevailing thought. The other one is, well, what leverage do we have? What argument do we have in the holster that we could use here to not pay a max? And if Phoenix is the Phoenix that we've known them to be sometimes, they will hold some of that data and utilize it and say, and maybe it was part of what they were trying to utilize when they were saying that they didn't want to max them this past year and to give them the extension before, you know, the rubber would meet the road. That the other centers had played well. So the idea that you're basically arguing that it's like a relatively interchangeable spot where we can get anybody to play well here because you're playing with Chris Paul and you're playing with Devin Booker and we've got a solid defense and we've got shooting around you. That's true, but there's a difference between Ayton and those other guys. And like they're going to take a step back if he's not the guy and they don't replace him with a high-level center that is versatile. He's not perfect. He's got room to grow. He needs to take some of that room and actually grow even more. But yeah, particularly as we're having the conversation about how much does Chris Paul have left as far as time, as far as ability, you're going to start seeing some of the downsides of that answer if there's no DeAndre Ayton there. A lot faster, I would think, because he's a terrific role man. He's a terrific mid-range shooter. He's a terrific guy around the basket with touch. He's developed into a much, much better defender than he was when he got into the league. And those guys don't grow on trees necessarily. So it they could slip quite a bit if they don't bring him back. It'll be interesting to see if they don't what that looks like, and can they make a sign and trade work to get something? Because if you just let him walk at this level where you've been a finals contestant 1 year and the next year you've got the best record in the league, that's not normal to watch that happen, to see that happen.
Yeah, like Jakob Poeltl and Keldon Johnson for DeAndre Ayton. That's the type of trade I could see happening this summer. And, you know, I don't.
And that's a big change. I love Keldon Johnson, but Jakob Poeltl, like, you could work him off the floor just by fouling him, or, you know, or by making him go to the free throw line. Like, he's not 100%. The offensive player, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Very good defensive player.
Tough. Yes, tough situation in Phoenix. I kind of think their window shut, and I thought they entered the postseason with more pressure than any other team, and they clearly buckled under that pressure. I have a quick email here that I actually did not include in
Let's hear it.
The outline, Chris, so I'm throwing it on you. Spur of the moment, it is not heavy lifting on your brain, so don't worry. It comes in from Ryan, who writes, "Settle an argument for my wife and I. We're Jazz fans, but even more so basketball fans. Dallas's cold-blooded slaughter of our team was cast in a new light by their subsequent trouncing of the Suns. We disagree on what it means, though. So when your team gets beaten in the playoffs, are you supposed to join forces and root for the team that bested you? Or do you hold a grudge and root against them in future rounds? I'm full on Luka hive mind now. Each Dallas win makes me feel better / less badly about Utah's exit. My wife, on the other hand, has an ever increasing hatred of Luka with each win.
Oh, boy.
This probably makes her a more authentic fan, but she doesn't get to feel better like I do. Whose rooting method is correct?" Ryan, great email. Good question. I'm gonna keep this simple. For me personally, I'm extremely petty. When my team loses, I despise the team that beat them for years. So, No, I'm with your wife. I'm sorry. I don't think that's the right way to be as a person. You're healthier, Ryan. But that's just how I am. I can't help it.
Yeah. So I'm not like that, but I am. If I have to pick a team that I'm going to rock with, I'd rather root for the team that's beaten my team a lot of the times, because then I can use the fake argument that my team was the second best team that way. transitive properties and whatnot sometimes. But the truth is, like, if it's a rival of mine, and the sport that I can always pull from is college football, I'm almost never going to root for Ohio State as a Michigan fan, and I'm almost never going to root for Notre Dame. There have been bowl games where they've had to play each other, and I'm just like, yo, it's kind of blissful, because you're like, I don't want either of these teams to win. So I'm just like, if it's a stalemate, we're good. But no, generally speaking, I find it easier to root for teams that, like, damn, they just kind of came out of nowhere and beat my team, and nobody saw them coming. There's a bliss in watching that, because it's like you got kind of – it's like your house got picked up in the storm. You're not going to necessarily feel better that you don't have a home anymore. But if everybody else lost their home too in the same storm that nobody saw coming, like, at least it wasn't just you.
That analogy is some of your best work, Chris, I got to say.
I told you with the analogies, man, I'd be hitting.
Man. Okay. Well, thank you, Ryan. That was a wonderful email. Let's jump into the Bucks and talk about their future for a second, Chris. The Bucks lost yesterday in another blowout, not as bad as Phoenix's blowout, and it was on the road. because the Bucks chose to play that game on the road by benching their entire team in the last game of the regular season, and that was their decision. They wanted to avoid the Brooklyn Nets in round one, and it came back to bite them. But the Bucks, you know, they still have Giannis. They have the built-in comfort of knowing that they lost this series barely without Chris Middleton, who, you know, he's their second all-star. I don't know if he's their second best player, but he's critical for how they function on offense. And if you watch the Milwaukee Bucks, actually, they're critical on both ends, frankly, because Grayson Allen playing in this series was really tough to watch, I'm sure, for every Bucks fan out there. And, you know, George Hill was getting minutes. They couldn't really match up with Tatum and Jaylen at all throughout the series. And so it's kind of like they didn't have Chris Middleton. He'll likely be healthy. You'll assume he'll be healthy next year. They still have Giannis. Pretty much everyone on the roster is coming back next year. You have Bobby Portis, who has a player option. He'll likely decline. You have Pat Connaughton, who was tremendous in this series. Shot the ball great. He has a player option that you would assume he'll also decline. And I think he has bird rights, so the Bucks will be able to pay him whatever they want.
They need to pay him, yeah.
But with the Bucks, you never know, because, you know, there could be a PJ Tucker situation as well. We'll wait and see. But I don't know if this is like a fair take, but like, I kind of feel like we'll potentially look back at Giannis's career and we'll think that he left golden opportunities to win at the highest level on the table. You think about 2019, losing in the conference finals. You think about 2020, you know, he sprains his ankle in that series against the Miami Heat and they go down. Obviously, last year they win the championship. And then this year they go out in the second round again. And it's just like this team is the trade that they made to get Jrue Holiday. They sacrificed basically all of their future assets. They're cashed out. Brooke Lopez is 34. Chris Middleton is not young. Jrue Holiday is not young. And I don't, you know, it's going to be really hard for them to kind of tinker. They were fortunate that they had Bobby Portis, who won them game five with that offensive rebound. They're fortunate he stayed on the team because he could have cashed out as well after last season ended as a free agent. So I just don't know where, I mean, the Bucks will still be very good for sure. But do you share in my concern a little bit about how this is kind of playing out for Giannis and whether or not the Bucks can get over the hump again in his prime?
Well, so yeah, I agree with you that I think it's always difficult, especially when you can look at a specific year. Really, they had 2 years where they basically did what Phoenix just did. Not quite as spectacularly as far as the nature of the Game 7 loss last night. But they had 2 years where they had, I think, the best record in basketball. And then, you know, ironically, last year was the year they got over the hump, a year where it looked like they were going to lose to Brooklyn. So it came out of order for them. Like, they probably should have won it just as far as how dominant they were in one of those initial years where Giannis won MVP. Didn't happen that way. They obviously lost the one series we've talked about on a couple of the recent podcasts in the Toronto series, where Giannis kind of got bottled up and didn't know where to go with the ball. They didn't have enough options around him sometimes. Jrue Holiday wasn't there yet for Eric Bledsoe. You're right. They're getting older. I do think that some of us are probably going to overanalyze this series because of Middleton not being there. I also think some people are going to take too much comfort in the fact that it was a 7-game series. Okay, Boston had fourth quarter leads of double digits in games. Let's see. 4, game 5, game 6, and game 7. They more or less dominated the back end of this series. If it's not for the Jrue Holiday play, the two Jrue Holiday plays in game 5, they win this series in 6. Boston wins this series in 6. You also have to go back earlier in the series. they might have won the series earlier then too, had they not blown, Boston not blown a late lead. So, I mean, like, the series was close, but it was only close because Giannis was incredibly superhuman the whole time. Middleton being there would have helped it, but they were ghastly shooting the ball. I mean, I rarely, as we talk about how rare it is to see a Game 7 performance where a team just gets blasted at home by 40 or whatever it was, we also don't see teams shooting 4 for 32 or whatever it was in Game 7s. But the truth was, like, I felt like it was Milwaukee was barely holding it together by the end of the series as it was anyway. Giannis went for 44-20, and they lost by 13 at home. Drew Holiday had a game where he took 30 shots. In this series, he averaged 22 shots per game to score 21 points. Like, that's not sustainable. You were just trying to do enough to get to the next series to get Chris Middleton back. But they do have questions, and maybe some of it is more like, how does this translate to the postseason sort of questions? Grayson Allen had a very good season. He shot 40% from three. He absolutely torched the Bulls in the first round. He didn't have it in the second round. Budenholzer didn't pull him in the second round. He kept starting him. Bobby Portis, who I noticed since we've been on this podcast, apparently did not like the story I wrote today about their their rotation and about the decisions they've got to make. He was really not happy about it, and he didn't like me including him talking about his defense in this series. But even regardless,
you got to back up. Fill me in on what you were talking about right now. I don't even know. Bobby Portis has a beef with Chris Herring.
He tweeted. He retweeted the story that I wrote on the Bucks and kind of like how there were real holes in their rotation and real problems with their rotation in the playoffs. It all boils down to the same thing. They didn't have depth. And obviously your depth is going to look a lot different when Middleton's not there. But defensively, it was difficult. The reason that, as we know, that the Bucks struggle sometimes is that they play a drop defense, which, credit to Brook Lopez, he was coming up further in their scheme than normal. They were playing a little bit outside of their scheme by having him come further up, which in some cases made it a little bit more difficult for Jason Tatum until he caught on. Until they figured out, until they started moving the ball. But you don't get 30-point games from Al Horford and from Grant Williams if you're not playing a scheme that invites teams to shoot threes against you. So just by nature, Boston was kind of set up to do better in the series because their shots were going to be easier. It just required a role player or two to step up. The Bucks didn't even have that possibility in the series other than maybe Portis. And Portis did not play well enough, even though he, like you said, he had a play that won them a game in the series. Their role players were not good enough in this series, and I don't know that their role players, generally speaking, are good enough most of the time to do that. Chris Middleton, some people will say you plug him back in. He's the whole answer to all of it. But you have to keep in mind that a team like Boston's not necessarily going anywhere. Like, they have more depth, and no matter what Milwaukee does this offseason, they're still going to have more depth than Milwaukee. And so that's just a reality. It doesn't mean Milwaukee can't win. Giannis will always give you a chance to win. Injuries may come into play, coaching stuff. Milwaukee may have the best chance to win next year, for all we know. But that window is going to close a little bit over time as these guys get older. And certainly if they are hesitant to tinker around the edges because they don't want to spend. It's just the reality.
I'm not going to say that their window is closed or anything like absolutely dumb like that. Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton, yeah, they're not young, but they're in their early 30s. Like, I feel like they still have years of successful, efficient, two-way basketball ahead of them. And Giannis he's someone who, it's like, you see it with, he's obviously a great, great, great player already. And I know you were working on a story about how, you know, if they won the title this year, we'd have to really recalibrate where he is historically.
Sure.
But you can, you know, it's okay at the same time to say this dude has some holes in his game that he can improve upon. And we're still waiting on some of them. But as you saw, even in the Game 7, you know, when he's the screener for Drew Holiday, and Drew Holiday, they're not switching it because they don't want to switch Jaylen onto Giannis. And Drew hits Giannis in those pocket passes on the short roll. Giannis catches it around the dotted line or maybe a little bit extended. And he just makes those like 90% of the time, those little push shots. And it's plays like that where it's like, okay, he doesn't need to do X, Y, Z, i.e. he doesn't need a pull-up jumper. He doesn't need to be a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. That stuff would help. Improving your free throw shooting would help more on a more consistent basis. And his work ethic is like, there's no reason you should still believe in him to figure some of these things out. And the battering ram nature of his game against a team like Boston, yes, I know that Chris Middleton didn't play, but there are certain things that Giannis could still do to neutralize that he was not able to do. So you see him just, you know, trying to bum rush the rim over and over and over again. And he ended up shooting 10 for 26 yesterday. And unassisted, I don't know what the numbers are, but unassisted, he was probably sub 30% shooting the ball. So I guess like the point I'm trying to make is that do not discount the Milwaukee Bucks going forward, because Giannis is going to just get better and better and better. And he still has a lot of room to grow. And he's a tremendous player. So
can I ask you something tied sure. to all this? And then we should move on, I guess. But were you, I guess I'm a little bit stuck between looking at their rotation and saying like, damn, there's not much there, at least for this series, because Middleton was out. But also like still being a little bit surprised that Bud didn't do a little bit more to try a little bit more on some other guys. Like, I thought that certainly, why am I blanking so much on names today? Name starts with a J. I'm struggling. Javon Carter could have played a little bit for George Hill. George Hill got 5 points in this series over 5 games. He did not score in the last 3 games of the series. He was playing somewhat decent minutes in this series, too. He was not taking shots for a lot of those times. There was him. Serge Ibaka, blast from the past. I thought dude was like 39. He's 32 years old. I don't think he would have made a difference here. I don't see him as being someone that's going to go contain out on the perimeter or anything like that. But I could have seen him like getting a minute or two, like just to try something, even as a stretch guy, something. There was just nothing here. And there were so few adjustments. Pat Connaughton, you mentioned he played well in the series. He didn't do anything yesterday. He was rough yesterday. So I know it's going to make things difficult. Like, who are you benching, him or Grayson Allen? Grayson Allen was not productive in the back half of this series. I was surprised that we didn't see more of some of these guys or any of some of these guys, given how poor the performances were for some of the other people that were out there. I don't know what the answer was. I don't think they had enough to win this series, but I was a little bit surprised that, I don't know, maybe Bud was hoping for lightning in a bottle with Grayson Allen after what he did in the last series. But I just thought, did you kind of feel like there was something else you would have tried here?
I don't think so. Like, I don't think Javon Carter is the answer against the Boston Celtics.
It's not,
you know what I mean?
Answer, but George Hill's not either. And I felt like we'd seen enough of him to know he's not the answer or to try something else. Javon Carter was getting garbage minutes. I don't know. Maybe we're probably too deep in the weeds over it when it just was Middleton was maybe just the key thing. But
I think that if you're Bud, you know, it's interesting. Like, I think I think that the roster was just compromised. I think, like, honestly, it goes back to two decisions made by the front office and ownership. Not bringing back PJ Tucker because he is a critical piece for when you want to go small. You can't go small without players like that. They tried to with Bobby Portis. He just was not effective offensively. And every time he was on the floor, Jason Tatum hunted him in a pick and roll and had pretty good success for most of the series.
Tell him that so that he'll back off my tweet, fam. But you're right, though. Whenever they went small, but that's difficult to do, too. Like, putting Giannis at the five, it makes them super fast. It makes them... spaces the floor better for them. Giannis,
it's just a matchup problem. It's a matchup problem against the Celtics.
Huge matchup issue.
Because Tatum will eat. He eats Connaughton. He eats Grayson Allen. He eats George Hill. You have Jaylen Brown who could do the same thing. Wes Matthews is overextended. There were so many plays offensively, especially in crunch time, where Wesley Matthews kind of forgot he was Wesley Matthews, and it was to the Celtics' benefit. The other decision that they made, you brought up Serge Ibaka. They had Dante DiVincenzo. They didn't have to trade Dante DiVincenzo. That's a player that they drafted. That's a wing who they did not win the title. He was on the team technically, but he was hurt when they won the title. And I just think his value was miscalculated by that front office. And I know that they would have had to pay him this summer, but that's another question for ownership. And
weird things happen when you win championships without a player, though, because then you start thinking, oh, well, we did it without him, so why pay him? That's probably the way an owner is going to think.
Right, but that logic does not apply to PJ Tucker. So
true,
and
true.
And look, I understand the, you know, Brook Lopez's back. This is all different, I think, if Brook Lopez does not have back surgery and you're not sure what you're going to get from him, or you are sure what you're going to get from him and you're confident and you don't need to trade for, you don't sign DeMarcus Cousins during the season, you don't need to trade for Serge Ibaka as insurance. But wings in general slash always are more valuable in the postseason than bigs. And, you know, that was just, that's the decision that they made. And it cost them. Okay, Chris, let's close. We wanted to preview both series. We touched on the Western Conference a little bit already, so I want to just kind of focus in on the East. Wait, before we get to the East, just what's your prediction for the West? We'll at least do that. What's your official prediction?
I'm gonna pull a Michael and say that I kind of just don't love this matchup for Golden State. So I'm gonna rock with Dallas here. I'm not really sure on games, but since they're the away team, I'll probably say in six. I could see it. I mean, I could definitely see them causing problems for Golden State and pushing them in a way that maybe Memphis was not able to. I mean, Memphis did push them, obviously, but and certainly more than Denver did.
I am also going Dallas in six, and I think one of the reasons why I really, in addition to Luka, Jalen Brunson is playing out of his mind as an independent shot creator. And Jalen Brunson I'm picturing it right now, like Jalen Brunson attacking Jordan Poole, making Jordan Poole unplayable. I see that, not unplayable because you kind of got to play him, but I see that as being a key matchup in this series where that dude is just, he's ruthless in the post, and he's stronger than I think a lot of people think. So Brunson, who did not shoot the ball great in the second round, but was still pretty effective offensively in the aggregate, I think that's a big deal. And it'll honestly come down probably to Dorian Finney-Smith's threes and Maxi Kleber's threes, but I think those guys are good shooters. So I'm going Dallas in six. Okay, let's talk about the Eastern Conference real quick. What is a key matchup in this series? It's the Miami Heat versus the Boston Celtics. I'll just kick things off with something that I've been thinking about, Chris.
Okay.
We just saw the Celtics make the immortal Kevin Durant look like Anthony Randolph. We saw them hold Giannis to 45% shooting. I think Giannis had 36 turnovers in that series.
He had like 20 offensive fouls.
Yeah, it's a lot. And they just have so many locked in great individual defenders. Right. So my thing that I'm like really thinking about a lot is, how do they match up with Jimmy Butler? What is the game plan to stop Jimmy Butler? Are you going to switch all the ball screens with him and be it a small like Gabe Vincent or Victor Oladipo or Tyler Hero, even Max Strus, or more importantly, when they run the Butler Bam Adebayo pick and roll, are you switching that? Are you dropping? How does that matchup look? Are you going to force Jimmy into a lot of the same You know, if you do switch everything, are you going to be able to force him into a lot of the same inefficient looks in isolation basketball as they did with KD, with Giannis, with Jrue Holiday? That could be the series right there. Like, how they cut off the head of the snake again? Can they do it three times in a row with three great players? That's what I'm really focused in on. And honestly, over the past few years, the Celtics have put Jaylen Brown on Jimmy Butler as the primary defender. I'm predicting that Grant Williams is the primary defender on Jimmy Butler. And I think that creates a lot of problems for the Miami Heat, because Grant Williams, I mean, if you can keep Jimmy out of the paint and stop his penetration and kind of keep him on the perimeter, it takes away so much of what he is excellent at, which is the drive and kick. And then once he drives, once he kicks, then the ball's moving. Then Miami's offense is really flowing, and that's when they kill you. And Grant moves his feet. He's as stout as anybody playing right now defensively, and he is really difficult to get around. And he can switch. He can switch onto Bam and neutralize that. He can switch onto basically anybody and neutralize it. So in those situations where they do switch, and let's say Al Horford's guarding Bam, like, can Jimmy just have a great series going one-on-one against Al Horford? I feel like that's just like a win for Boston. Or even if you put Tatum on Bam and make the Heat run their offense through Bam against a pretty good defender. There's just so many, like, the options that Boston has defensively really make them hard to beat. And if you can't beat them on the offensive glass, which Miami could easily, they could do that. That could be their whole strategy. Pound the offensive glass. Or if you can't create turnovers and beat them in transition, like, getting in the half court, you're just dead. And it's going to take a heroic series from Jimmy, frankly, I think, for them to prevail. So that's what I'm looking at. What are you looking at with this series right now?
I actually had a lot of the same stuff. So, jinx from that standpoint. One of the things that really stood out to me about the last series, obviously, was how heavily Oladipo was leaned on. Obviously, Lowry was out for the better part of the Philly series. So you kind of had to go somewhere else for your point guard, your backup point guard, your ball handling stuff in the moments where Jimmy didn't have it. So Victor was really, really key from that standpoint, if only to give Jimmy occasional breathers from having to have that role. The guy was playing his heart out as far as getting you 35 a night or whatever it was. Bam can obviously take some of that responsibility, but we don't know how Lowry is going to look. If he comes back, when he comes back, if he comes back and he's, you know, can get around for a game before he's banged up again. So it's just going to be too physical a series, and I think too demanding of a series because of the defense you're playing against in Boston. If it's Jimmy having to be forced to kind of do the Giannis thing, having to do the KD thing, I don't like Miami's chances in this series from that standpoint. I just think Boston has too many bodies. And I think it puts a lot of pressure. Like, Bam obviously can hurt you, but I think it puts a lot of pressure on Oladipo to kind of have to repeat what he's done the last couple rounds by going from a guy that wasn't even playing, wasn't even in the rotation, to all of a sudden being a guy where if he can give you 20, it gives you a shot of winning. But you need him to do that. And that's a really, really big ask against a defense this good. It's a lot different than playing against Philly from that standpoint. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about, is just kind of what sort of production do they get from Lowry, if anything? And if they don't, what does Oladipo do and how does he look? And it's just, I feel like it's asking too much against a team that's got this many bodies, quite frankly. I really don't like Miami in this series very much.
They, you know, there's just no one to hunt. That is so critical. I'm thinking about the 2020 playoffs in the bubble, when Miami had a lot of success just going at Kemba Walker. It was like picking a scab. Do you like that analogy? Did I do a good job? there.
I don't like picking A scabs. Plus. Nasty, gross, gross.
Okay, fair. But they don't have anyone that you can like go at There's and no punish. Scabs. Like Derek White is.
You're not
Derek
trying to,
White is very good very luck. Good. So good I, and in the regular season, in their last matchup, their only game post trade deadline, Ime Udoka did put Grant Williams on Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy didn't even try it, didn't test it. Yeah. So I think that matchup is really, really interesting. And it also, you know, this can't be discounted, lets Tatum and Jaylen breathe a little bit offensively and not waste energy on the defensive end guarding this guy who is a monster.
Exactly.
So it's one of those, it's just a luxury that they have. Grant Williams is, you know, you're going to talk about guys who are going to make money this summer. He's eligible. That man's going to get, Celtics need to throw a lot of money at
I'm going
to
ask he if he could add me to the bank account. Critical. It would be good timing.
He is a critical player. and guys who can shoot 40% from behind the 3-point line, who hit, how many threes? I don't even know, 7, 8 threes.
Speaking of which, can we talk about that? Because like I watched the game, obviously, but looking at the box score, and you know we hit 7 threes, but it's so wild to look up and see a role player taking 18 in a game. I mean, but that it's so interesting because that was kind of I've always said this about game 7s. I'm not the first one to say it. There's always a role player that steps up in a big game 7. It's all like obviously the stars have a role in it too, but game 7s play out, they play out in a fluky fashion sometimes. You have a close series, the game 7 oftentimes is just, you know, it's broken wide open. Obviously, the Phoenix-Dallas game last night being the best example you'll ever have. But Grant Williams just taking over a game with a performance like that. But also, it was so smart on Boston's part to just say, look, man, we've got guys that are good enough shooters. And if they're just going to leave this person open repeatedly to make sure that Tatum, Brown, Smart aren't the ones that kill us, okay, then we just have to make it count and kind of trust in what we've been doing all season. These guys have been shooting this well all season. So if we're going to give us open shots with this guy that's been good all season, so be it. That's basically what that was, is you're trusting Grant Williams to knock enough of those shots down, even if he takes 18 of them. And within the 18 he took, he basically hit like on the nose, like 38, 39, 40% yesterday. And that was more than enough to put the game away. And it was kind of similar to what Horford did in the game where he went for 30. It's just like they're going to keep leaving them open.
Yep.
And then that massive dunk he had on Giannis was a result of them finally closing out on him hard. And then at mm-hmm. that point, it's like, okay, well, he's going to beat you to the basket because you're closing out on him too. You're overcorrecting now. So Boston, that's what I wish I would have caught. Like I went with my gut feeling on who to pick for that series against I picked Boston initially in 7. And then I think they gave us that game 7 round table. They're like, who would you take for game 7? I took Milwaukee because I figured Giannis would get it done. You were perfect on that. I don't want to hear it. You were right. Blah, 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 blah. You were right. But I said in my answer, this feels like it's been Boston's series because they've been out playing Milwaukee consistently. Maybe Milwaukee comes back and makes a late charge, which is what they did a couple times. But really, it felt like Boston was really close to breaking it open. That's what we saw in Game 7 is they kept getting open shots. Ime Udoka even preached the idea of being patient about when to take those shots because you could have them whenever you want. And in Game 7, they're like, all right, now go for it. And it worked out perfectly because those shots were open and you trust those guys to make those shots, Grant Williams especially.
So the last thing that I want to mention before we go is the other side of the floor where Boston had a very good offense after the All-Star break. And I guess in all of 2022, Jason Tatum took a leap as a playmaker, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And building off what you just said, they went up against this defense in round two that was, you know, drop heavy, gave up a lot of threes. And that's really not Miami at all. Like Miami is Boston. They're kind of mirroring each other defensively. So what I'm really fascinated to see is how Boston's offense, and Tatum in particular, and Jalen in particular respond when, you know, they're not, there's no walking into pull up threes. Like you have to make, like Miami gives up a lot of threes because they overhelp on drives and whatnot. But like, I guess it's, is Grant Williams going to still knock down threes? Is Peyton Pritchard going to still knock down threes? How do Tatum and Jalen respond in isolation? Is Al Horford going to have another or be as consistent shooting the ball? These are other questions that I have about Boston's offense. We'll see. Cause I think Miami's, it's really interesting to go from like a knuckleball to a fastball pitcher like that, offensively for Boston. And a lot of their defense, this is for everybody, but especially Boston, when they score and they can set up in the half court, or they draw a foul and they can set up off a free throw, it's like, good luck. Might as well just punt the ball out of bounds. You're not going to score on them. So if they can't get anything going offensively and then it leads into transition opportunities, things could go Miami's way. That said, time to make our predictions. I'm going Boston in six.
Dude, we're so boring today. No, that's what I had too. It was Boston in six and Mavs in six. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be an interesting chess match from a defensive standpoint, just because both teams have so many bodies that you can try on different folks. I can't see a series being more physical than the one we just watched, but I would expect for it to be a physical series again. I'm looking forward to it. I think I'm a little bit more excited about the other series, just because it's rare that you have a team. Well, I don't know. I guess so much of it is just thinking about Golden State and their place in history as far as the way we talk about them and the way we think about them. I don't know. Like, I guess I'm assuming that the Mavericks are underdogs, but they shouldn't be massive underdogs, because you and I both picked them. And I think, you know, I think people see the potential there for Luka to kind of interrupt the party to some extent. But I'm more excited by that one. But I actually really like this Miami. I'm getting more excited about this Miami-Boston matchup too. It'll be I feel like this one and the one against the Bucks just kind of have enough of an old school feel to them between the physicality and the defense, which I'm always a fan of watching. So,
yes, me as well. I'm flying to Miami tomorrow. Can't wait.
Welcome to Miami.
No, Chris, absolutely not. Sorry. Before we go, we literally just received an email from Johnny, who wrote basically he just wanted to know what the Suns offseason looked like. So I just wanted to say shout out to you, Johnny, for writing in. We obviously addressed that earlier in the episode. I think that's going to do it for today's show, Chris. Once again, thank you so much for your expertise and your insight. Thank you so much to our listeners for writing in with the great emails. Please keep them coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe. Everybody, please continue to enjoy the NBA playoffs.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.